point in waiting for latecomers, because I think all that's left are the rafters to hang on. So I'd like to get our reading for the evening underway. The privilege of introducing our speaker for tonight is in the very capable and appropriate hands of another distinguished American novelist. The pleasure of accounting for the occasion itself has fallen to me. The long connection with Bennington College on the part of all three of us, however, gives me the comfortable feeling of a family charade. You also are at liberty to feel playful as well as solemn. The solemn part arises from the purpose of this series of annual lectures, readings, public presentations, which Mr. Ellison inaugurates for us this evening. For the intent of the Stanley Edgar Hyman lectures is at once a celebration and a memorial. It's hard for me to realize only 4 years after the untimely death of Mr. Hyman that his name has already passed from the immediate realm of history, the kind of operative secular history which Stanley was always so careful to distinguish from myth, to the realm of mythology, in which, the anthropologists tell us, the young have always to be instructed through rituals such as this. Now, Stanley would have been the first to wince at such heroic hyperboles in relation to himself, and would insist that as a culture hero of Bennington's golden age, he played a cool hand of poker. But here too, as a founding member of Bennington's floating Friday night poker party, which included the then president of Bennington College, Paul Feeley, Howard Nemeroff, Kenneth Burke, and certain durable tradesmen of North Bennington, Stanley was fabulous. The work and the play of Stanley Hyman were always larger than life, chancy, and ebullient. In his ruthlessly iconoclastic study of literary criticism up to 1948, Stanley toured the upper and nether circles of literary criticism of mandarins, poobahs, and authentic angels of contemporary criticism, canonizing and excommunicating an incredible pantheon of contenders. With the thoroughness of Dante and the authority of Virgil, I speak, as you see, mythologically. And the title of that work was properly pugnacious, The Armed Vision. In his equally voluminous odyssey of demigods and heroes, which followed in 1962, called The Tangled Bank, Mr. Hyman went on to engage at epic length the whole trinity of our century of enlightenment, Freud, Darwin, and Marx, and purify the old shrines with a rigor at once Calvinistic and Hebraic. From there on, he moved to his Ovidian or metamorphic phase with an astonishing venture in mimicry called Iago, and subtitled Some Approaches to the Illusion of His Motivation, appeared in 1970 posthumously, in which he pursued the perfidies of Iago as stage villain, Satan, artist, latent homosexual, and Machiavelli through his various incarnations in genre criticism, theological criticism, symbolic action criticism, psychoanalytic criticism, and history of ideas criticism. And his epigraph for that volume was out of Iago's own mouth, "I am nothing if not critical." And his conclusion, I quote him, was that critics too can sometimes be most ingenious villains. The point for us tonight is not, as Whitman said of all true poets, that he set out to cheer up slaves and horrify despots, but that all of these books were discovered, explored, and finally written down as ventures in teaching at Bennington College, and are part of that bullion that historians and mystics now tell us helped to make an age golden. Ours, perhaps, is an age of copper by comparison, and even that, we learned from the Treasury Department, has become increasingly hard to come by in the coin of the realm. Stanley Hyman, a numismatist, a coin collector, whose collection of Greek coins would have inspired the envy of Jove, who in one of his metamorphoses turned himself into a coin collection, a shower of gold, was well aware of this in his lifelong search for counterfeits and originals. That was Stanley's constant concern. It is significant, I think, that Stanley's last odyssey was to accept instant transfiguration as a full professor with tenure and much wampum at a celebrated university near the Niagara, which shall be nameless. Now, at the time, it fell to me as a member of the Literature Subcommittee on Personnel to sound out the possibility of raiding him back and inquire whether he might not be persuaded to reconsider a return to Bennington. His reply via telephone was unforgettable. He said, in a voice of Ajax or Achilles, "Bet your ass. Get me out of here." So we have him back again tonight. And I trust for a long time to come in the guise of the Stanley Edgar Hyman Memorial Lecture. Now, both the mandate and the funds for this lectureship, which is one of the few constants left in Bennington's economy, come from the efforts, the initiative, and the bounty of Stanley's former students, counselees, colleagues, and friends, a memorial 3 years in the making, and devoutly wished by all. So it's especially fitting for me to thank one of his most distinguished counselees, whom Stanley then knew as Sonia Rudikoff, for chairing this effort over those years and assuring its completion. Now, 3 years is not a long time to build a memorial, as the Egyptians reckon these things. And our memorial is not as tall as a pyramid, but it does seem to me sumptuous tonight as it brings to this podium an artist in the invisible about whom Mr. Mallard will have more to say.
Speaker is inevitably Ralph Ellison. He and Stanley Hyman were very good friends. They had met when Ralph was editor of the Negro Quarterly, and Stanley called on him wanting to review books. It came out that they were both admirers of Kenneth Burke, the critic, some call him the greatest living critic, who was then teaching at Bennington. The more they talked, the more they had in common. They became serious reading, arguing, music listening, and drinking friends. Stanley introduced Ralph to the literature of myth and ritual, and gave him as a gift a copy of Lord Raglan's The Hero. Ralph instructed Stanley in matters pertaining to blues and jazz. He thinks he may have deepened Stanley's already aroused feeling for Negro culture. After reading in manuscript Invisible Man, Stanley immediately and emphatically predicted the importance and success of the novel. Soon Ralph and Fanny Ellison were coming to Bennington to see and stay with the Hymans. Mrs. Hyman was, of course, the novelist and short story writer, Shirley Jackson. Stanley, for political and other reasons, wisely abstained from learning to drive, and Ralph used to deliver him in his station wagon to the hospital where Shirley was engaged in giving birth to her youngest child. Ralph is Barry Hyman's godfather, a clever way of mixing gods and men and perhaps even races. I learned tonight that the major interests of Laurie Hyman, namely the trumpet and photography, were more or less derived from Ralph's interest in Laurie and in these modes of entertainment. Ralph Ellison is a friend of Bennington College. He has spoken here often. As a matter of fact, his very first talk was at Bennington College, and has more than once been invited to join us as a member of the Literature and Languages Division. For various reasons, he had to turn us down and now does penance as a member of our Board of Trustees. We welcome him tonight in various visible and invisible guises, but most of all as the distinguished author of Shadow and Act and Invisible Man, the latter important both as an artifact of recent American history, but much more important as a work of literary art. Mr. Ellison will read tonight from his novel In Progress. Ladies and gentlemen, Ralph Ellison.